It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly. And today we have a panel of experts here to talk about the status of telework in the federal government. Welcome, everybody. We've got Tyler Robinson from Young Government Leaders, Kate Lister from Global Workplace Analytics, Kimberly Wells from the Office of Personnel Management, and Ron Sanders from Booz Allen Hamilton joining us. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jenny. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for all joining us. And just wanted to take a moment and go around to each of you and ask you to give us just a quick little blurb about your organization and some of the work you may have done on telework. And since Tyler's here with me in the studio, we'll start with him. Give us a little the elevator pitch on YGL.
Thanks, Jenny. YGL is a professional organization of over 5,000 young professionals early in their career. It's not just people fresh out of college or average ages in early 30s. And we do a variety of things from getting people together for service events or networking opportunities. We have a mentoring program with the Senior Executives Association. So we're just trying to do a lot of different things for people fresh in their careers. And we also do surveys along telework.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Kate, you're joining us from Global Workplace Analytics, which does a lot of work on mobile and telework.
Yes, we do. We work with communities and companies to help them evaluate the business case, so to make that pitch to the C-suite and help people understand why they're doing it and what's in it for them. We put together a database of over 4,000 data point studies and case studies and research papers and so forth, anything we can get our eyeballs on that has to do with alternative workplace strategies. And from that created a model that can calculate the bottom line environmental employee and employer benefits of telework.
Great. And that's going to be very important as we get into our discussion today. And Ron Sanders, thank you for joining us today. And you have quite a large background in human capital issues.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Jenny. And I'm not going to bore people with that background. I do want folks to know that Booz Allen is a strategy and technology firm that serves almost exclusively federal government clients. And I think one of the reasons you asked me to appear today is that, among other things, we sponsor research with various good government organizations. And in this case, we did a research project a couple of years ago with a Partnership for Public Service called On Demand Government, which focused exclusively on telework and actually posed some quite aggressive targets for the government that have yet to be reached. And I also hope we get a chance to talk about the fact that in Booz Allen we practice what we preach. About 70% of our 25,000 employees now work either at client sites or hotel. And we'll talk a little bit about what that means. And that's allowed us to save millions in real estate costs. So we've really embraced flexible workplaces aggressively.
Great. And that is certainly something we'll chat about as we get into the show. And then we also have Kimberly Wells with us from Office of Personnel Management. And OPM is really overseeing, in some respects, telework as it gets pushed out through the federal government in terms of conducting an annual status report, and that's one of the things that you're here to talk to us about today.
Yes, absolutely. And I manage the telework research program for OPM. And of course, as you know, we've collected telework data from agencies since about 2002. And in December 2010, with the signing of the Telework Enhancement Act, really our role there was formalized with data collection with federal executive branch agencies. And we have issued two reports since the signing of the act. And that's one of the things that I'll be talking about today, of course, is that 2013 report.
Great. And why don't we jump into that briefly to give sort of the overview of the status of telework right now in the government? And really, it's, you know, we're into 2014, so we're looking back a year at 2012 data, but I think it gives a good overview of what you're looking at. And can you tell us a little bit about who you surveyed in the report and really what it showed about telework?
Absolutely. Sure. So since we actually have two sources that we draw our data from for the report, and the first is an annual data call. And as I said, since 2002, OPM's actually conducted an annual telework survey among agencies. The signing of the act did lead us to make some substantial revisions to the survey, largely to improve the evaluative value of the information we collect, as also to align our collection with the act. There are a number of factors that we really look at closely: the number of employees deemed eligible to telework, rates of participation in telework, frequency of telework participation. We also look at barriers, and a very important driver, of course, to telework in the federal government is the goals that we can achieve for agencies. And so we identify some of those goals and also look at whether or not agencies are achieving those. The data that we used for the 2013 report represent official records from 90 participating executive branch agencies and also 179 sub-agencies. Data were collected, as you said, in October of and through December of 2012. We also analyzed the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey data. It's another source to help us evaluate federal telework, and these data are important because they provide us with the employee perspective and also an opportunity to examine the relationship between telework participation and outcomes that are important to agency performance from the employee perspective, things like employee satisfaction and turnover intentions. And for the 2013 telework status report, we analyzed survey data from April to June of 2012, and survey data were collected via the census of 97% of executive branch agencies. I believe there was around a 46% response rate for that survey. And of course, the good news is that we're showing that telework participation is really on the increase. The act has functioned to advance federal telework. We have a number of questions in our data call, especially that look at some of the multiple aspects of participation. First, you have to remember that before an employee can telework, she or he must have been determined eligible and also have a signed telework agreement. And in the year between the 2012 and 2013 telework reports, we've found that the number of employees that have been deemed eligible for teleworking increased by 49%. In 2013, 47% of federal employees that were determined eligible, according to that report. The number of eligible employees with telework agreements actually increased by 84%. So this is all very good news for us and supports actual participation.
Right. That's a huge agreement.
That's huge.
In terms of that. But does it mean that these employees are actually teleworking just because
right.
they have an agreement? Or,
right,
you know,
right.
we're seeing an increase in telework agreements, but are they teleworking? Are
and
they doing
that
work?
That's a good question, and that's, of course, what we really want to find out. And so we had two sets of data in this particular report. First, a little background. Once the act was signed, agencies had to satisfy a number of requirements by mid to late summer. And also, in order to satisfy the reporting timeline for the act, we needed to collect data no later than the fall. So consequently, we asked agencies to provide the number of eligible employees teleworking for a pay period in September for that very first telework status report. And September is a fairly representative month without unusual events like vacations or weather events that might lead to under or overestimation of the number of teleworkers, and that's why we chose that month. So we continued the same practice during the next reporting period to make sure that we had comparative data so we can look at whether or not participation is actually increasing or not. And results, of course, give us good news and show that the number of employees who teleworked in that September to September snapshot actually increased from, I'm going to give you raw numbers, 168,000 to roughly a little over 209,000, which was an increase of 24% during that year. And we also asked agencies to provide participation numbers for fiscal year, beginning with this past year's data collection. We want to give a nice baseline so we can do some trend analysis. And we found that for the fiscal year, 30% of all federal employees actually teleworked. And that probably, a little slightly higher number than we were finding in September, probably as a result of occasional situational telework that agencies, that employees are able to engage in on sick days and in snow days.
Jenny, let me put that in perspective. In one of my previous lives, I was associate director of OPM and had the privilege of working the original 2002 telework report. And it really does reflect an order of magnitude change in teleworking in the federal government. That first report was actually pretty dismal, both in terms of response and in terms of results.
I'm guessing there weren't many employees teleworking at that point.
No, it was still, at least for the federal government, it was still a relatively novel concept. And we even struggled for a couple of years over the definition of who's eligible and what actually constitutes telework. All of that's been resolved now, and the Telework Enhancement Act has helped immeasurably. But the trend line, while I personally would like to see it steeper, and would like to see us being able to report even more progress, the fact is, where we started about a decade ago, the progress has been pretty substantial.
That's good. I mean, I think that's something that there's obviously been a lot of focus on. And we're going to take a first quick break here. And when we come back, we'll just finish up on what the OPM report has to say and go into our discussion on what we're looking at in terms of cost saving and other benefits and best practices. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we've been talking about the current status of telework based off of OPM's new telework report. And Ron Sanders was just reminding us about how telework was back in 2002, which was probably not very much back then. And in the studio here, Tyler and I were just talking about, I was thinking about it. I don't think I even got my first cell phone, let alone looking at teleworking, until about 2000. So it was certainly a new thing back then, but things have changed drastically over the last decade. And Kim, when we left, you were talking a little bit about how OPM had found that telework and telework agreements had increased drastically. But I think that doesn't mean to say that it's perfect. There are still some barriers that you have found to telework.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we have found as we look, I have a snapshot of cabinet-level agencies, for example, and we see that while the percentage of employees that have actually been declared eligible to telework are quite encouraging, and most of the 15 cabinet agencies have declared more than 50% of their agency employees eligible to telework, and that's really good news for us. But actual participation among telework-eligible employees really tells a slightly different story, whereas there has been some increase in participation in the year-to-year comparison. Still, the participation rates themselves are a little bit low. Over two-thirds of cabinet agencies reported about 30% or fewer of eligible employees actually teleworked during our most recent data collection period. And only two cabinet agencies, Health and Human Services and Treasury, actually reported more than 50% of eligible employees were teleworking. So, as you said, there are some barriers that we're seeing to telework. And again, our report does look at that a little bit. Our agency data, for example, allows to describe some of what those existing barriers are. And as in prior years, what we're really seeing is internal resistance. Managers and culture really rise to the top of to about 32% of respondent agencies. And when I say culture resistance, I mean things like a value placed on face time. And we also noticed that information technology issues were mentioned as a barrier by about 20%, with budgets also described by 11% of agencies. And also that Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey gives us an opportunity to look again a little bit at some of what those barriers might be. First of all, we did see that in the roughly 631,000 employees who responded to our telework question, the 24% of them were actually teleworking, which is nice confirmatory data, and it does support what the agency records are telling us. However, you have to see that 76% of that number of respondents really aren't teleworking, and the question is why. Interestingly, 13% simply choose not to telework, and while 35% have to be physically present on the job, so that they're just simply not eligible to telework in that case. The most interesting group for me was the 22% that checked the box that said, I don't telework because I didn't receive approval to do so, even though I have the kind of job where I could telework. And so I think that aligns, again, with some of the management resistance information that we're finding, too, from the data.
So a lot of places still to do some work. And, Kim, I know you have to jump off here, but before you go, can you tell us where people can find the telework report to see what really is in it? Because it's a meaty report.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes, it's over 250 pages long, but of course the text is just around a little over 100 or something, a lot of nice appendices. So yes, please do. Your listeners could go to www.telework.gov and look for the status reports to Congress. And I do hope you'll have a chance to read it. A lot of really good information there on individual agencies as well as overall.
Great. And thank you for joining us. And
thank you for having me.
Appreciate having you here. And for the rest of you with us today, we're going to jump into some other things. I think Kim and the OPM report gave us some good ideas that there's encouraging progress being made, but maybe not to the level that we'd like to see. And but I do think there are some reasons we should telework. And Kim, Kate, I know you at Global Workplace Analytics have found some really interesting reasons about why telework is important in terms of cost savings.
Yeah, I call it the solution to the problem du jour. It tends to change over time when there's a snowstorm. Certainly, continuity of operations holds to the top. And before the recession, nobody was really talking about cost savings. It was way down on the radar. It was more about being able to hire and retain the best people, about reducing work-life conflict, about its impact on sustainability. But as the recession unfolded, it really moved it to this focus on cost. And that came at the same time as other mandates within government to reduce real property holdings. And so it was kind of a perfect storm. And in some ways, you know, I think the recession was a good thing. It sort of pushed this whole topic to the C-suite and the private sector and to, you know, the Congress and in the public sector to say, hey, you know, this is important. We can save some real money. Before I get into that, though, let me also just point out that those numbers, I am impressed with the progress that government is making. But in total, only about 8% of government employees are doing this at least one day a week, compared to the 47% that are eligible.
And is that what we're terming normal telework is one day a week? I guess the question is, you know, Tyler, I know you have teleworked in your career, and is one day a week feasible, or is that, you know, is that what you're seeing in agencies?
Well, it really depends kind of on the time of the season. Some times of the year, especially during the end of the year with the fiscal stuff, sometimes you have a lot of meetings that are done in person, and if you're calling in as one of the younger people, it's not necessarily as looked well upon. When we've surveyed our members, we found about a quarter telework one or more days a week, and a third telework less than once a month. So that's kind of where we've seen the numbers lie, is that it's kind of on occasion, on demand. Some people are really embracing it, but a lot of people are still enjoying the social aspect of coming into work on a fairly regular
basis. definitely not. People like to make this polar. You know, you either do it all the time or you don't do it at all. The sweet spot is somewhere in that 2 to 3 day a week range, because it gives you that social interaction on one hand, the collaborative time at the office, and the concentrated time at, you know, home or your third place. And it also allows you to maximize those financial benefits. And based on the calculator that we have, it's actually free, available on our website. And we have a paper on the ROI of telework and government that has 125 footnotes describing how we come up with all of the savings potential. But according to that, if those people who are eligible and wanted to, so take out the 13% that don't want to, if they teleworked 2 days a week, which is about average for those in government who do so regularly, as a country, we would save $16 billion a year.
That's a pretty big number, especially in a budget time.
But Jenny, let me go back to something that Kate said, and just pull that thread, that this was sort of the solution du jour. And what I'm afraid of is that we may have plateaued a bit in the federal government. And so while I'd be the first to acknowledge that we've progressed a lot since 2002, as we pointed out in our on-demand government report, we would have recommended an even more aggressive target of about 600,000 who are both eligible and with a significant portion actually practicing telework. But I'll have to tell you, I think one of the things that I've seen personally as Chico for a couple of agencies and now as a consultant, you really do have to take a more systemic enterprise integrated approach to telework. And agencies tend to break it up. The IT department is working one piece and the HR department is working another, and often never the twain shall meet. This has to be a business strategy that's integrated. You got to look at data and network security as well as the digital tool set you provide employees. You got to look at mission and business continuity. You got to look at facilities management, not just getting rid of real estate, but how you're going to manage what you have left and hoteling. Program management is important. Workforce strategy is important. Training managers are important. But it, again, in my experience, in our experience, the secret to success is to wrap all of those things together as part of a change management strategy that says, here's the way we work today. This is the way we're going to work tomorrow. But unless you cover all of those things in an integrated way, there are going to be chinks in the armor, and we're not going to get beyond the plateau.
Well, and that's a good point, is that it's not just people not showing up to their desk and using technology. It actually has to fit in with what people do. And sometimes I wonder about this whole idea of cultural change. Is, you know, some of it's clearly because people worry about employees being away and not having that face time and not doing their work if they can't be seen. But some of it may have to do with trying to bring all those different pieces together and not being able to do that, because it's not just telework. I mean, it's a lot of things. We need to have integrated technology and an enterprise view and human resources, you know, to get a whole bunch of different programs to work. And I wonder if we're seeing, is there anything out there that makes you think that there is some of this integrated cultural change going on? I don't know. You know, Tyler, you said you're part of a COOP plan, which is different. So that's, you know, they're looking at it for that sense. But is it being integrated, at least in your experience, across the board? Are you receiving training? Are you being told how to do this?
Well, I think it's kind of come with trial and error in terms of different experiences. I've worked at a variety of agencies, and each one does their telework a little bit differently. I found at one of the larger agencies I worked at, when they started to really push telework, because I was in the HR department, and they switched to more of the hoteling approach, a lot of people started teleworking a lot more. I wasn't sure whether people were teleworking more because their office space got a lot tighter, so when they're working side by side with someone, maybe they thought, well, working at home is nice to be able to do that. Or if it was because it was just constantly communicated on the benefits of teleworking and the managers really buying in, that we wanted to lead by example from the HR department. So I wasn't able to figure out exactly why that was occurring. But when it was pushed from the top, more people accepted it.
Right. And Ron, that was something you mentioned, was the idea of hoteling and some different practices. And sometimes I wonder if it's looking at some of these innovative practices that you really have to push from top down? I mean, you can't just have a manager decide to hotel their employees, which for people who don't know, and I guess, Tyler, you and Ron can explain that, it's when you're not actually, your workplace is not actually at your physical mm-hmm. work office space. It's wherever you choose to have
wherever
it.
You can find it. Wherever you can, you come in, I have a lot of friends in different consulting firms, and you just show up and you find an open desk and you sit down and maybe you put a picture of your kid next to your laptop and you move on.
Take it home with you that
yeah,
night.
Yeah, everybody, this, you know, this is the mobile workforce. But Jenny, I agree, especially in the early stages as you're changing the way you work. It needs to be part of the organization's business strategy, and it needs to be top down. And with all due respect to my colleagues in the HR profession, I think if this is seen as exclusively an HR program, that lessens its chances of success. As I said, it's really got to be integrated. The CIO's got to be involved, the space management people, the change management people. But at the end of the day, senior leadership needs to say, this is how we're going to do it. And maybe we'll talk later with Booz Allen. We sort of ripped the Band-Aid off and said, look, our, partly because of cost, but partly because of the need to have a more mobile workforce that can move from site to site, we are going this way. And while we executed a very sophisticated change management strategy to get us from here to there, we made it clear that we weren't turning back. This was the way we were going to work. And I think when employees hear that, and when managers hear that, I'm thinking of the Spanish conquistador who, when he landed in the New World, he burned the boats. It's sort of the burn the boat strategy. We're going.
Right. There's no going backwards from that. And I think part of that is looking at the ROI for companies, and that is broader than just a human capital issue. And so I think when we come back, we're going to stop here for our mid-session break. But when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit about how the private sector does it and some of that ROI that you're seeing with telework. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote, and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here today with Tyler Robinson from Young Government Leaders, Kate Lister from Global Workplace Analytics, and Ron Sanders from Booz Allen Hamilton. And we've been talking about the benefits overall of teleworking for businesses. And if you want to consider the government a business, in terms of when we ended, we talked a little bit about ROI and why do private sector companies do this? And, you know, Kate, I know you mentioned this, and Ron, you mentioned it with Booz Allen, is that it's not just the cost savings. There's employee benefits, there's real estate costs, it's everything. And it seems to me that the private sector has really taken this broader approach to this is a good business model.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, benchmark against somebody, the government ought to be benchmarking against the leaders like Booz Allen and others that have, you know, 50, 60, 70, you know, 100% of their staff working remotely. And they do it for different reasons, but the leaders are doing it, as Ron said, in a holistic way. Because telework isn't the end game. I mean, it's the benefits. It's about allowing people to work effectively wherever they are. Because studies show over and over again, they've already left the building. 40, 50% of the time, these desks are not occupied. That's just crazy. And the private sector companies are doing something about it, as are many government agencies. GSA is doing a fabulous job with this. So, I mean, the benefits come from real estate, yes, absenteeism. The majority of people who call in sick aren't. They're taking off because they've got to take their child to the doctor, or they're tired of the office politics or whatever is going on. All kinds of research shows that telework reduces absenteeism.
Right. And that's something that is just sort of looking at a reality of the modern workplace in some ways, that people do need some of these flexibilities that weren't built into 9-to-5 jobs.
Yeah, interestingly, just giving them the flexibility increases engagement, regardless of whether they take it. It's a matter of control. You know, we all just want some piece of control over our lives. And, you know, that's been proven over and over. So, you know, they're sick less, they're great, more engaged, morale is higher, less likely to leave. These are all the reasons that turnover goes down anywhere from, well, in the call center industry, if you've got 100% turnover, you've got bragging rights. And by going to the remote work model, those calls, the big call centers have been able to reduce their turnover, you know, down to something closer to 20%, which is still really high for any other industry, but just as an example.
Right.
Productivity goes way up, too. I mean, it's, you know, you don't have all of the interruptions of, you know, somebody stopping by your cubicle, running to an ad hoc meeting, the time it takes to go to a meeting.
Right. There's a lot of benefits. But Ron, one of the things, and you may have seen this in your various roles in government, is that not everybody in the government, given some of the constraints like you mentioned around security, they can't be deemed eligible. And maybe we've got a little difference between how many people really should be deemed eligible to telework, but there is a good number of employees in the government that probably can't telework.
It depends on your definition of telework. If telework means you're not in an office building or in the home office building, there are still alternatives. For example, we explored all sorts of interesting variations on the theme in the intelligence community when I was Chico there. Satellite locations that are secure, for example, or setting aside real estate office space in one agency's facility to accommodate employees working remotely from another agency. And it has tremendous benefits for collaboration, by the way. One of the ways we were able to sell that is for mission assurance, continuity of operations. If your workforce is distributed, you are less vulnerable. But that's all part of making it a business strategy, not an HR strategy. HR clearly is an important component, but it's got to be a business strategy, and you've got to take mission into account. Jenny, I do think also one of the secrets to success, in addition to taking this integrated approach, is to provide enablers. And I'll cite two that I think are best practices. First, on the employee side, and there are employee concerns about, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But if you provide a robust set of digital tools that will allow employees to do their work and, most importantly, to collaborate, to converse with their coworkers in a way that is almost as good as being physically present, and frankly, for those organizations that are globally distributed, even better, because you're talking to people 1,000 miles away. So the digital tool set can be an important enabler for both employees and for managers. And then one of the things that we've found really helps managers sort of get over the I got to see it and make sure you're working syndrome is to provide a support system for them, their own set of online training tools, putting all of the things that managers are asked to do into a virtual environment, appraisals, feedback loops, et cetera. We've just installed, for example, an online tool to capture feedback on employee performance, that feedback from other employees, from clients, from supervisors, all of that you would think has to occur face-to-face, but in today's virtual environment, if you provide the right tool set, you can enable a manager to both gather and provide feedback on employees and performance online. And that helps them get over the security blanket of being able to walk around and see people. We've even taught them how to walk around virtually using instant messaging and other tools so that after an adjustment period, they realize that managing and leading virtually is actually pretty convenient.
Well, and that's part of it, is making it easy for folks. But one of the things that I wonder, you know, you look at what Booz Allen is doing, you look at what some other places are doing, and they have, I don't want to say they have the budget, who knows what different private sector companies' budgets are, but they don't have the same budget constraints that federal agencies are working under in terms of, you know, appropriations by Congress and not knowing what your budget's going to be. And some of this requires some infrastructure to telework. You need the virtual capabilities, you need the technology capabilities. And Tyler, I don't know if you guys have seen this or Ron, when you were in the government, is that technology there, and or is some of the budget cut having a negative impact on the ability to do telework?
I do think that the simple teleworking, I need to be able to remote log on, or I need to have a secure laptop, or those types of things. I've been in a couple agencies where they're going straightly to all laptops when they're refreshing their computer cycle. So I think the basic infrastructure there, I haven't really seen anything in terms of like training for managers or those types of things. When we've talked with our members, most of them, about half of them think that there's no change in their productivity when they're teleworking, and about 40-some percent think that their productivity is actually increasing, and then 5% think that their productivity is decreasing. But when I ask them, what do you think about your manager's thought on your productivity? And then it's still about half of them thought that their manager thought there's no change in their productivity. But then about 25% thought that their manager thought that their productivity increased, which was great. And then another 20% thought it decreased. So they thought their performance was 5% decrease. They thought their manager thought 20% of the time they had a decrease.
Interesting. So there's a difference among...
So there's a slight difference in terms of the communication on what I perceive my own productivity to what I think my manager sees of my productivity. And I think those different tools that can kind of close that gap would be beneficial, but I haven't seen it in my handful of agencies.
Right. And Ron, are you seeing it get out there in terms of technology and budgets, or has that been an issue?
No, I think Tyler is spot on. Agencies are more and more just going to laptops. Part of it is for worker mobility, but part of it is because laptops are just as expensive as a less portable PC, or just as capable as less portable PCs. And so you might as well, as you're refreshing your infrastructure, use the state of the art. But I want to go back to the issue of paying for it. Look, this stuff pays for itself and then some. As Kate has pointed out, and as we've experienced in Booz Allen directly, we've been able to give up several office buildings in the Tysons Corner area because we've gone to almost total hoteling and client-site work. 70% of our workforce is mobile now. And you can just imagine what the square foot real estate cost is of a couple of office buildings around Tysons Corner.
It's definitely more than it used to be.
Oh, yes, and getting higher. But so the business proposition is pretty clear, but here's where I think agencies stumble a bit in taking advantage of that business proposition. There's a long-term commitment here. If you say we're going to go to telework, we're going to burn the boats, it may take 2 or 3 years to terminate leases, to put the technology in place, the tool set in place, to get managers in place. So there are upfront costs. Those upfront costs are more than offset by the savings, but you've got to have some patience in order to reap the savings. You've got to be committed to this. If you dip your toe in the water, you won't pay for it. If you go for it, if you're fully committed to it, It's still going to take a while to fully realize it, to get over the culture change, to get people to embrace it. But on a cost side, to terminate the lease, to build the infrastructure, to ensure that you've got data and network security and meet all those standards, et cetera. But over the medium and long term, 3 to 5 years, it's a money saver. And these days, as Kim said, I think budget pressures are going to make this an even more important strategy.
Right, if we can take the long-term view. And I want to take a break here for our final word from our sponsor. But when we return, we'll wrap up our discussion and talk a little bit about some final barriers and best practices. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show about telework. And when we left, we were talking about taking the long-term view on telework, which, you know, I always think is easier in private sector in some ways than the public sector, where you're forced with short-term budgets from Congress. It makes it, and turnover from political appointees too, it makes it hard to take sometimes a top-down long-term view. But I think the point is there that if people can do it, and some agencies have done it really well, PTO was what I was thinking of, GSA, a couple of other agencies. But one of the questions I have is, we're talking about, you know, 70% of employees at Booz Allen are teleworking. And Kate, you mentioned a bunch of other companies have these really broad segments of their workforce teleworking. One of the points that Kim brought up is that there is a segment of people who are telework eligible, but they choose not to telework. And actually, when I saw an OPM presentation on their report, at the Federal Labor Management Council the other week, OPM had done something about satisfaction among employees, and it was employees who are not deemed telework eligible have the lowest satisfaction. Employees who telework had a higher satisfaction, but the highest satisfaction was among employees deemed telework eligible but chose not to telework. And I thought that was really interesting.
I think that's about control. That's the issue I was alluding to earlier. They've chosen not to telework, but they've been given the choice. And research in the private sector bears out on this as well. It's by giving people the flexibility to do something, it makes them happier anyway, even if they don't use it.
Right, and I suppose they could use it if they wanted to. So they have
that
option. And Ron, are you finding that people in Booz Allen or some of the other places where you've looked at telework are increasingly choosing not to telework?
I think there are some that choose not to for various reasons. Although let me share a very interesting study we did about a year and a half ago in Booz Allen. We hypothesized that employees who collaborated with and trusted their supervisors were much more likely to stay with us, to be retained. But we were worried that because we had moved to 70% client site or hoteling, those connections between supervisor and employee were being broken. And we found something very, very interesting. We found that effective managers were trusted. Their employees shared information with them and with their colleagues. They were able to build a very collaborative environment without regard to physical location or proximity. The ineffective managers, didn't matter whether they were across the hall or across the continent, they didn't have that trust. They didn't have a collaborative environment. But we were surprised. We were expecting to find that geographic proximity would have a bearing, and it did not. But for those managers that struggled, we're actually part of a research project, in part because we have embraced telework so aggressively. We're part of a research project the University of Maryland is doing to look at effective virtual leadership practices. What makes those managers in our survey and in other organizations who are able to establish the connection with their employees to collaborate, to be trusted, even though they're doing so virtually, what are they doing that's different? We're a couple of months away from the results of that study, but I'm anxious to see it, and you can expect that that the folks doing the study at University of Maryland, this is at the Smith Business School, are going to publicize it, because I think it's going to give us some interesting guidance in terms of ensuring that managers have the skills to be able to manage in a distributed work environment.
Well, and that's really it. Some of it may take a different set of skills or a different way of looking at the skills and utilizing the skills you already have in order to deal with some of the new technology and working virtually on that. One of the questions in terms of, I guess, both teleworkers and managers that I have as we're looking at effectively managing this is some part of me asks, and I think I've heard other people say this, is part of it generational? You know, do young people expect to telework more? Is it that there's a generation gap in technology? I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think it's individual by individual. And in fact, OPM's executive summary said something that the majority of teleworkers in the government are skew older than they do younger. But Tyler, do you find that people in YGL want to telework more, or is it just is it different?
I think the point on having the choices is key in terms of that. We found that, similar to the OPM study, about a quarter or so telework on a regular basis, but 43% telework less than once a month, and 10% choose not to telework at all. And I think that younger people, when you're fresh out of college or you're early in your career, you're trying to make those connections, you're trying to meet with people, you're trying to figure out, how do I fit in this big old world out here?
And maybe trying to prove yourself,
trying to prove yourself. So if, I think, I don't know if it's more expectations on the manager's part that if you're in the office and doing whatever it is you're doing, that it's easier to make those impressions than if you're not. One of the things that we've thought that is key is to be able to measure productivity, or being able to, as a manager, thinking about how do I measure whether the person I'm managing is doing a good job. We asked in another survey on the people that had work phones, and a third of them were expected to answer their work phones, even not during work hours. So I think that's part of a growing culture in that regard, where when you're teleworking, sometimes you're teleworking, but you're always working. And so I think being able to manage those expectations, sometimes people might choose to not telework because then they don't have those particular things. We haven't really delved into that.
Right. So, and that goes back to the point Ron was making, is that it's about effective management, mm-hmm. and effectively communicating why people should be teleworking, when they're teleworking, and actually doing it correctly. I mean, it makes me think of the title, Ron, of the partnership study that Booz Allen did with them, is this on-demand government. Do employees see that they're on demand all the time if they're teleworking?
Well, they may, but and I'd be interested, Tyler, in your reaction to this. I'm not sure it's an expectation to telework, but one of the things that that we found with clients and experience I had in the intelligence community when we were hiring thousands of young folks, actually got to the point where 50% of the workforce had 5 years or less of service. I think young people today think and act and work collaboratively with buds in their ears and terminals at their fingertips. It comes naturally to them. So it's not so much an expectation of telework. It's that I don't care where I'm working. As long as I got the devices that allow me to reach out and collaborate with other people, I'm happy. And you've got to make sure the devices work. You've got to make sure the infrastructure's there. Got to make sure their managers enable them. And we've had some interesting generational tension in that regard that we've seen clients have to deal with. But I think it's even deeper than an expectation of telework. It's that this is how I expect to work.
Right, and that's a cultural shift. It almost makes me think we may not be talking telework in 10, 20 years from now. It may just be
work.
This is the culture.
Right. You work in an office? How unusual.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Everybody thinks that, or you don't, you can't log on whenever, or can't do it. You know, it's a whole different way of looking at things. But if you had said to us 20 years ago, we'd be talking about telework and virtual conferences, and that would be different.
Yeah. I think that that's part of the case. I know early in my career in government and in the private sector, you have a lot of ambition. You want to, like, if someone sends you a request or a client sends you a request or whatnot, you want to get back to them right away because you want to, like, move up in your career. And I found that when I respond within half hour on a request, the next time they send me something, they expect that I can respond in a half hour. So I've tried to be able to manage those expectations in terms of, well, I can get it to you in a half hour, but I have all these other priorities that I'm trying to work with. Where if they send me an email at 10 o'clock at night and I respond to them at 10:30, next time they send me an email at 10 o'clock at night, they'll expect it at 10:30. And so I think it's partly our the way we work, the way we're wired, but partly our ambition to be able to prove ourselves early in our career.
And setting those things. And we have just a few more minutes on the show, but I'm wondering, you know, one of the questions I think about is that, you know, as we're talking about telework, we've kind of hit on some of the main points, but as we go to our last few minutes of closing, is there something, you know, Kate, that we haven't talked about that you really think is a big important piece of this telework puzzle that really should be focused on?
Well, I don't think that we've hit hard enough on the need for results-based management. Only 10% of people in government say that they feel that their performance is rewarded based on what they do. It's based on how long they've been there and how much, you know, the boss likes them and so forth and so on. One of the problems, significant problems in government, is that you can't fire the slackers. And the hallmark of a success in a remote work program is that your voluntary turnover goes down. So people aren't leaving, and your involuntary turnover goes up because the slackers are exposed. If they can't, you know, if they can't measure up, if they aren't meeting their goals, then, you know, they're out of there. That doesn't happen in government. And so until we get to the point where people, you know, at every level in government are being managed by results, including are you making your telework goals? I mean, that's not part of how managers are measured in most agencies. We did a white paper on the obstacles and opportunities to telework and interviewed 100 or so federal telework managers. And this just came out over and over and over again, is that we need to hold people accountable for what they do.
And that really is a big part of it that we've all come back to, is this enterprise view, but also performance management. It really goes down to how you deal with the employees in your agency and how you deal with managing your workforce, which is broader than just human capital, but it comes down to that. And I want to thank you all for a very interesting show. I think we could talk about telework for quite a while longer and would love to have you back. And Ron, especially once this Maryland study comes out, to see what they found on that. So wanted to thank each of you for being here today and have a good weekend. It's hard to believe it's Friday already with that snow day. So thank you all. And that's all the time we have today for the show. Fed Talk is brought to you by the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Have a great weekend.